each of the 42,000 plus COVID-19 deaths recorded so far in the U.S. has a life attached to it, and often many grieving family members and friends. I found out a little over a week ago that a friend from college, Daryl Dushner, lost his mom to the disease. She was 72-year-old Annette Dushner of Valley Stream, New York. I asked Daryl to join me to talk about her and what he's been going through. Daryl, thanks for being here, and I am so, so sorry about your mom.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeremy, and very much appreciate your condolences.
How are you holding up, first of all?
It's tough. You can't really have human contact as we're isolating. And aside from my girlfriend, the only person to provide me with any sort of human touch or comfort was a best friend I grew up with, who's a critical care pulmonologist who had been counseling me through the whole thing. He came out to give me a gloved and masked hug and have a catch with me in the park.
But you're saying that even in grief, you're not able to get together with any other loved ones just to deal with it together.
No, yeah, not at all. So I have three siblings, two elder brothers and an eldest sister, and then we all haven't congregated. We conference call a lot in the last week, but yeah, we can't get together. Not yet.
Tell me what it was like just going back when you first found out that your mom had COVID-19.
It was very frustrating to hear because, you know, my mother, I'm a little reluctant to mention this because I think people have a tendency to tune out when they hear that, oh, this person is old or this person had, you know, underlying conditions. But my mother had some underlying conditions. You know, she had type 2 diabetes, she had a slightly compromised immune system, she had stents in her heart, some issues with her eyes, but she led a pretty decently active retired lifestyle. She's only 72. And so when she got infected, you know, you can only tell, as I'm sure a lot of people can relate, their parents are our parents' generation. They're stubborn. They don't listen. You can only say, please stay inside so much.
Right.
You know, when she got infected, it was very, you know, it was March 22nd. She'd reported a dry cough out of nowhere. And what's, you know, most highly frustrating thing is we can't really give a definitive source of her infection. You know, she still, you know, ended up, you know, sneaking out, going to the bank by herself. She went back to the grocery store. There's nothing we could do, you know. And sure enough, she got sick.
What was it like when she was in the hospital? How did that work? Because you weren't able to go and visit her.
Correct. Yeah. So her conditions worsened. And after 11 days, you know, my mother didn't want to go to the hospital, but there came a point where we waited and we told her, you know, you need to get help. And she didn't have her boyfriend at the time also had told her that he wasn't going to come around anymore to help her because he had to isolate because he felt like he was getting sick. And right. I think she fell twice and realized that she had to get to the hospital. So an ambulance took her there on April 1st, and she was in the ER. Her oxygen levels weren't great. A day later, she got worse. They tried to give her, you know, they took her off the nasal cannula and, you know, extreme oxygen and put her on a CPAP machine. And that seemed to have worked again for a day until she descended and got worse and was intubated. And she was of mind to commit to intubating, which is something she had always said she never would want to do, to be hooked up to life support or a ventilator. But she, you know, did it for us because we, you know, through the phone, were begging her to fight with everything that she had.
What were you able to say to her when you did talk to her?
We didn't really, it wasn't so much of a conversation as she couldn't breathe. We only got to really FaceTime with her once she was on the ventilator. You know, she slightly opened her eyes through tears, you know, I'm telling her how much I love her. And, you know, we were spoke to by a doctor, the lead pulmonologist of the hospital, who had said that, you know, I frankly don't think your mother's going to survive this. I just went into kind of scramble mode and I reached out to experimental drug companies, just cold emailed them. And incredibly, one of them responded and thought that my mother was a great candidate. And trying this whole time for hours to get in touch with the hospital to stay my mother's palliative care and keep her from being unhooked from life support, she died. And it's just devastating because, again, it's like you think that, you know, we're capable of enacting change, or there's always some maneuver that you can make to outmaneuver something like this. But, you know, in the end, look, I know that it probably was a few days off in timeline anyway. It wasn't really a minute miss out, but,
No, you did everything you could, Daryl. I mean, when I hear you say that, it's very clear that you did everything you could to help her. And you ended up writing this post on Facebook after she passed away, and you said, "I could not hold her hand on her last day of life as she held my hand the first day of mine," which was such a touching thing to read, because it made clear just how close the two of you were.
Yeah. You know, she'll never walk me down the aisle. I'll never get to dance with her at my wedding. She'll never meet my kids. But yeah, it's to not be able to, I think that's maybe the most painful part, is imagining her having been in the hospital 11 days by herself, to not have family by her side at the end of your life. It's crushing to me. It really breaks every cell in my body that I couldn't have been there. She didn't deserve that. Yeah.
Daryl, one of the things that you wrote about this, and I want to ask you about it, is you said that one of the most tragic things about this is you believe that your mother's death was preventable. What do you mean by that?
You know, I've always been I really never get political in my life. I keep quiet, and I'm very respectful of everyone's opinion, because, you know, they always say don't talk about what, you know, religion and politics. And, so, you know, I really do appreciate every human being and person and their perspective. But this was fully preventable. The amount of deaths that we've had to endure, the tens of thousands of deaths we've had to endure. Close your eyes for a moment. Picture your family. Now imagine them gasping for air, frenetically ambulanced to the hospital, and then dying with the electronic sound of their fading pulse as their only company. You know, my mother loved many things. She loved getting together with family and celebrating holidays. She loved eating pasta, and she loved watching TV, including the news. And when you have conservative media trickling down the lies, and you have mixed messages about whether this is less harmful than the flu, that the flu is more deadly than this coronavirus, and then 6 weeks later, it's all of a sudden, it's you turn your chip around and you're claiming you need to stay in and that this thing could really hurt you. It confuses people. You're supposed to trust what the president says to you. I never would have thought of my mother as an unsuspecting martyr, but that's exactly what you're making her, along with the tens of thousands of her faded but not forgotten peers. And with every passing day you don't right your presidency's ship and handling of this catastrophe, you're creating thousands more, because the cause they unwittingly died for will undoubtedly be your removal from office. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. But if there's something that you want to say to everybody just about how you'd like your mom to be remembered.
My mother was extremely kind and generous person. She was predeceased by my father, who she had married in 1972. He passed away in 2011. My father also was a survivor of 9/11 and was in the first building that had got hit and escaped from the 34th floor to safety, thank God. He had passed away from lymphoma, and after my entire lifetime of struggling with Parkinson's. And my mother took that tragedy and kind of rose from it and became stronger and the major adhesive of our family and kept us together. And she spent 32 years working for the Hewlett-Widmer School District as a monitor and teacher's aide, bringing her beautiful, what cannot be described as anything else than beaming smile to the hallways, so that every student could feel a little more cheered up every day. I'm going to miss her dearly. So will my family. And so will our community.
Well, Daryl, I wish that we were in the same place, because I would love to just give you a huge hug right now. I'm sure this is so difficult. I thank you for coming on and telling us about your mom and the experience you went through. And hopefully it will make a difference so that not so many other people will have to do the same.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on.
My friend Daryl Dushner talking about his mother Annette, who died on Easter Sunday. We've got photos of them at hereandnow.org, and we end this segment with a song that was one of her favorites.